let us move on after. So the overall Gabriella Peralta view about the Gibraltarian situation and the fact that obviously 88-90% of Gibraltarians voted to remain in the EU.
Voted to remain. Yeah. We did vote to remain, but now that I think we just have to follow the UK, really. Sure, we weren't happy that the decision wasn't in our favour, but we've all just had to kind of, you know, live with it. We want to be British, so if being British means that we have to leave the EU, well, we'll leave the EU. That hasn't been an issue. That it was called on June 24th, and we said, okay, we're not happy with it, but we'll do it.
Yeah, we see on the flip side.
There's never been a issue with it. Yeah. Understand that Spain has a veto in the EU, but Spain has always had a veto. It was spelled out, so it did put more of an emphasis on it, but just like the 27 other countries, they've always had that veto, and so did the UK until they decided to leave. I think that's where the difference is. Before, the UK had the veto too, but now that it's leaving, we don't have that anymore. Mm. But yeah, the border queues are a bit longer now. Mm. Yes.
They've always been quite long.
Every time politics flares up, they'll just make sure that we have a lengthy border queue. So it was right outside my house and right round the rock. So what happens is if the border queue gets too long, as you're approaching the border, they'll just tell you go round the rock and you have to go right to the other end of the rock and start at literally the back. So it can go on for, you know, a couple of kilometres. So, and we're only 3 kilometres long, so it goes on to about half of us.
Well, in the words of Shadow Foreign Secretary Emily Thornberry, referring to Michael Howard's line 35 years ago this week, another woman Prime Minister sent a task force halfway across the world to defend the freedom of another small group of British people against another Spanish-speaking country. I get the feeling Michael Howard is not necessarily a big fan of Spain somehow. Hmm. Maybe
spite in football, probably.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Some sort of issue on that basis. But,
on a dodgy tapas once upon a time.
Who knows? Inflammatory comments like these will not help Britain, according to Emily Thornberry, what it needs to negotiate with respect to Brexit is to obviously work our way through that. And in fact, Liberal Democrat leader Tim Farron says it's unbelievable that within a week of triggering Article 50, there are Conservatives already discussing potential wars with our European neighbours. Well, you see, Gabriella, once again proving that people pod scorn, Ben, when we actually decided to have a weekly feature of a Gibraltarian correspondent. I said, wait and see, We have the all-seeing eye. We know where the action reporting is. You know, it's been week after week.
And it's a green journalism, bearing in mind.
Exactly.
No fake news.
Precisely. She checks her sources. She reports
straight from the heart.
Exactly. And we still haven't found out about Frodo. How is he these days? I mean, what's the Frodo perspective? Because I noticed he's been noticeably quiet in the national press and the media. And I haven't even checked out whether he's actually got a Twitter account or a Facebook site.
No.
If not, he should have.
He has an Instagram.
It's not quite Twitter, though, is it, really? I suppose maybe Instagram.
Similar enough. Yeah. It's still there. It's there.
Okay. Well, what is the Frodo perspective? Is he conscious?
He's not conscious. He's very much asleep.
So it was just the last 2 weeks, effectively, he was just perking up to do with the threat of war against Spain. Now he's dialed it down to DEFCON 1.
Yeah, exactly.
The threat has gone. He's knocked out.
Well, I think, you know, we can all breathe easier on the notion, because this, ultimately, it's a bit like the octopus that used to predict the World Cup results, I feel. Yeah. In terms of geopolitics and global affairs, find out what state of consciousness Frodo's in. That'll tell us where we're going. Yeah. Anything else, Ben, you'd like to talk about, be it Gibraltar, Spain, or indeed the likelihood of Gabriella effectively sort of fleeing from Spain with the rest of the Gibraltarians seeking solace in the arms of, I don't know, Italy?
Well, I tell you what's the situation with
Italy?
I thought you'd pick up on that one, Gabriella.
Why would I flee from? I'll be fleeing from Gibraltar and going to. But I wouldn't flee anyway. It's my home, so it's not going to happen.
Yes, that's the tenacity that we appreciate so much. Anyway, Ben, over to you.
What was the situation regarding the court case? Is that developed anywhere at all, or is that just dissipated somewhere?
Oh, the fraud one.
Yeah, the big fraud one.
Oh, no, they're still waiting. We're still waiting for a judgment. It'll take a while. Yeah. These things take a while.
Exactly. It's not Brexit.
Never
though.
Overnight.
It's no, not as though you actually sort of have two...
The court is a long process. It can take... it took 7 years just to reach court. Yeah. So making a decision probably isn't going to be that quick.
These are critical matters. On a slightly different note, and talking ahead, looking ahead to Richard Fitzwilliams, we have a sort of wonderful line that he's just put up. Mumbling House of Lords debate on the 4th of April, the curse of the large and small screen and stage. Yes, it seems that even the House of Lords, now that they've finished discussing, obviously, European matters and so on, are concerned with the number of mumbling things that are occurring. And in the words of the National's Richard Eyre, the notion of incomprehensible speech, because artists and accents can make understanding plots of plays difficult. In other words, people are mumbling too much. In the words of Richard, he could understand more of what James Dean in Giant than he could interpret what Jamie Foxx and Will Ferrell were saying in Miami Vice, or even Simon Russell Beale in Death Trap in 2010. He's not a one for mumbling, is Richard. Any thoughts on that, Gabriella? I mean, have you been concerned with, in real life, we often don't hear what someone is saying in a conversation, so indistinct speech is therefore more realistic and more atmospheric. Should we actually run this programme on that sort of basis?
I guess mumbling can be a bit annoying, but that's really the person's problem. I think it's usually mumbling, doesn't it come from a mixture of not looking you in the eye, kind of mumbling, looking away, so you can't really hear what they say. So I think it's just probably a confidence thing.
Or a political statement and a political strategy, because I suspect that
if they can't hear what you say, then, you know, exactly. They don't know what you're doing.
Well, or it's just not important information, I don't know.
You signed up for what? Oh, my, extraordinary. Any other questions, Gabriella, that you might have for Ben Lewis before... Actually, are you with us next week, Ben?
I will be with you next week, yes.
So you will be here for the return of Ellie Sample.
Oh.
Yes.
Is it cutting the book out, is it? Or?
Just celebrating the joy of being Director of Communications at the University
fabulous.
Of America. So, yes, very much looking
be
forward to
be a fun show.
Thank you. Always. We're already signing up. And, in fact, it's as a result of that Gabriella will be reduced next week to a mere 5 minutes, because we launched the show...
See, the Gabriella Peralta show, is it the Frodo show then in the next 5 minutes or next week?
It'll be
a
mini Peralta sort of feature, because we'll be starting the program off in Los Angeles, where it'll be midnight in Los Angeles.
How exotic.
I thought so. So Phil Leonis will actually finish our midweek drive in Los Angeles, obviously when it's 10 a.m.
Yeah.
And so we're wrapped up at the day, 11 a.m. at that stage, and then he'll rejoin us again the following day, well, after another day.
Double header.
Exactly. That's assuming his phones actually work, which if you were listening last night, you will have heard the most extraordinary cliffhanger that I can frankly recall in
is
Siren
it history. Dialing tone, is it? Or?
Oh, more than that. No spoilers.
Voicemail.
Even worse than that, actually. He was live. And if you were one to believe in conspiracy theories, Gabriella, you might sort of think, oh, that's it. Abduction. Alien abduction. Blame the Spanish. just thought I'd roll it in there in terms of a little bit of edge for the programme. Ben, last two questions, please, for Gabriella Peralta.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your telephone with us this morning?
Yes, I particularly enjoyed this one, thank you.
And will you be joining us again next week for your 5 minutes of Frodo?
Yes, I'll bring 5 minutes of Frodo next week.
Fabulous.
Do it, baby. Do not do it.
Apropos of Frodo, it's worth noting that we're approaching the day where it is the first anniversary of the microchipping law. Yes, chip your dog and check your chip, according to the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. A recent press release in which dog owners are told to check your chip on the first anniversary of the microchipping law. Have you chipped your canine at all?
I don't think so. My parents might have in the vet, because you should
do it
the
legal,
anyway.
Exactly. You can't have an illegal canine.
He has a chip anyway, so...
I mean, we didn't check with Frodo, because I presume he's been chipped in any case.
Yeah, but it might be different to Walter.
Find out next week, obviously. Have you chipped any pets that you have, Holly?
My cats probably are chipped in some way.
I would have thought so, exactly. Of course, that's the kind of clarity. What we really should have said was something like, Richard Fitzwilliams. sorry, mumbling Richard.
Sorry, I didn't quite get that.
Oh, Richard, did you not check the subtitles? We were just being realistic and natural and spontaneous.
Sometimes one needs subtitles. You're absolutely right. How right you are. The House of Lords were complaining. The facts were that a lot of serials and quite a lot of programs in the BBC do not have diction that is articulate. The problem is they could only complain insofar as it involved the BBC license fee. When I go to the theatre sometimes, I often find, most recently of the film R, with the play Art at the Old Vic, that actors do not project enough and screen when you have all this mumbling.
I can see this is obviously causing challenges. Holly McGrattan, are you concerned with mumblers?
Yeah, I was just trying to think of the last film, because there was a recent film where I was like, I can't actually understand what you said. Mm. But yeah, it is an issue.
Especially when they're conspiratorial, either they're plotting to blow someone up or indeed some romance is in the offing, and they speak quietly, they whisper, and frequently you miss it, and these are pivotal moments. I mean, Hell and High Water, one of the top movies of last year, it was excellent, but I only discovered what the plot was when Jeff Bridges came on the screen and started actually saying things I could understand, and even La La Land and Moonlight were not exempt.
Well, as Louis Servi would point out in his regular advice for Holly in the 48-hour film challenge, which starts, curiously enough, in 48 hours from now. So, actually, 96 hours, it'll all be done.
Yes.
A film challenge?
A film challenge, Richard, which is part of the Sci-Fi London Film Festival, in which the Midweek Drivettes will be taking part and aiming to produce a 48-hour movie. a 5-minute short,
yes.
Where they will be triggered by given the details and the plot lines. I think it's Saturday morning that the official line starts.
Yeah, about 11, you said something like that.
Sort of things will be released. And as Louis Wasabi would say, sound, very important. Sound quality.
Sound quality.
Absolutely essential. Poor sound usually equates with poor movie.
Yes.
Anyway, we'll just keep it quiet. A quiet passion, perhaps. Did you see what we did there, quiet Richard?
Passion, where you could hear every word beautifully enunciated, since parts of this film are punctuated with extracts, which she reads herself from Emily Dickinson's poetry. I mean, it's one of the sad things with an accomplished poet or writer, if you're recognized posthumously, not during your lifetime. And this is her extraordinary story. It's directed by Terence Davies. He's somewhat of a cult figure in movies such as Distant Voices, Still Lives, The House of Mirth. There's no question that of Time in the City, too. I mean, these are amongst the top, or regarded as amongst the top British films, and here we have, from her school days, which were unconventional, she was taken out of school, to the benign patriarchy, her father, Edward, played by Keith Carradine, Emily, and this is Cynthia Nixon, an absolutely superb performance. I mean, this really should get nominations. She is allowed to write poetry, but very, very early in the morning. He has to seek her father's, this is 19th century America, it's a well-off family, but the patriarchy is alive and well, and women have no independence, or practically none. And in a loving family, she has a brother and a sister. Sister Vinny is played by Jennifer Ely, who's a favorite of mine. But she befriends Miss Riling Botham, played by Catherine Bailey, who is independent, she questions, and yet when she marries, Emily becomes deeply bitter. Her work isn't acknowledged, and also she has no private life, and also she's experiencing very strange bodily tremors, which unfortunately have a very, very significant effect on her health. Then various members of her family die, and she becomes a recluse. Now, this is a really beautifully photographed film. It's so painterly. I mean, some of the sequences could have been lifted, say, from A Still Life by a Dutch master. But you're drawn into the world of a self-confessed, embittered recluse. And it is both a fascinating experience and, I have to say, extremely harrowing in parts. You've got superlative performances from all the cast. And you've also got a film that, it left me emotionally quite drained. You almost felt that you'd, insofar as it was possible, in the circumstances, had a glimpse, a very personal glimpse, of what it would have been like to have been a woman and someone whose work was unrecognized in the America of that period. This also includes the Civil War, where her brother Austin is forbidden to fight, and where basically you obeyed certain rules, even if, like Riling Botham, played by Catherine Bailey, a wonderful performance, you talked of flouting them.
Anna isn't here. She may be listening. She may be checking out the podcast. So we'll actually have her smiley face dedicated to one side or the other. And obviously she'll be prepping, psyching herself up for the 48-hour film challenge. At least that's what we hope she's doing in Harwich. Ben, would you go and check out this Emily Dickinson opus?
I think it overall it looks like a really good film. It's not particularly, the storyline and in particular the genre wouldn't be something I tend to go for. But actually, I think it looks quite a decent film. Again, I didn't think I'd be, you know, straight up to watch it, but I would watch it if prompted to.
Looks rather like a costume drama to me, Ben, but never mind. Holly?
Yeah, more or less on the same lines as Ben, actually. It looks like the harrowing aspects of it. I think that would be something that you have to watch to experience. That doesn't really come from the trailer, but I'll take your view on it.
Oh, you do feel that you've experienced quite a bit of it. It's often tough viewing, and often it is absolutely beautifully shot. I assure you, the casting is perfection.
Back in the 1960s, of course, almost 50 years, there was Mrs. Robinson, there was Dustin Hoffman, they were talking about The Graduate. In 2016, of course, Graduation is something completely different, isn't it, Richard?
It most certainly is, but this is a movie which, well, if you share the Best Director Award at Cannes, You expect quite something. And Christian Mungo's, I remember his 4 months, 3 weeks and 2 days, which was about illegal abortion in Romania in the 1980s, and that won the Palme d'Or at Cannes. And this is a movie about very complex moral dilemmas. It really will draw you in if you have a chance of seeing it. We meet a doctor. It's a contemporary movie. He's Romeo, played by Adrian Titiani, and he works in a hospital in Cluj in Romania, and he's in a loveless marriage to Magna, played by Lia Bugnar. His hopes are concentrated on his daughter Eliza, played by Maria Dragos. If she succeeds in her entrance exam, as it's confidently expected she will, she'll take up a scholarship at Cambridge. She'll have a new future. Father is also having an affair with Sandra, a teacher at Eliza's school. But here is the beginning of the plot. She's traumatized after a sexual assault on the eve of her exams. This seems very possibly to affect her, and she may very well be unable to achieve the required grades, so, because, of course, extra complications have occurred. So here is the dilemma, because once you start, what in actual fact actually happens to you morally? Her father proceeds down a path as he pulls strings, so the exam results, because of what has happened, will be rigged in Eliza's favor. But as she sits the exams, which are pivotal for her future, the police are attempting to trace her attacker, but the sleazy and corrupt characters who he's involved with, he's been otherwise a person of the utmost probity, what happens to them, what happens to him, and, of course, it involves something of the sort. This type of activity involves both his wife and his daughter, whom he loves so dearly. And we see Cluj, that it's a rundown, sleazy, crime-ridden backwater. It's the parochialism that's so stifling, and this affects everyone's lives. And the issue, it's a film that really does pose moral dilemmas, because if there's been an attempted sexual assault, obviously it's going to have a traumatizing effect. It does. So her father's trying to help her, but in so doing he compromises himself. And so you've got a dysfunctional family, because he and his wife only relate to each other with reference to issues dealing with their daughter. And also you've got an impoverished society still overshadowed by its troubled past. The Ceausescu is gone, but corruption remains rampant. And you've got the moral dilemmas as to precisely what you do if you feel it's the one chance your daughter has of escaping what basically more or less your life is not going to go anywhere. Hers could. This will affect it. This, what he believes, will save her. In point of fact, may well do the opposite, or not. So this is a movie that really will keep you on the edge of your seat. I mean, the tension's almost tangible. It's almost like a thriller at times.
You see, I was so convinced that Richard would have actually gone for the truly emotionally wrangled, torturous experience that is the Smurfs action movie, that I wasn't expecting Graduation to come through. Oh, maybe Ghost in the Shell, but still, Graduation.
Ghost in the Shell will come.
Oh,
but
will it?
Yes, it will.
A little bit of Scarlett Johansson there, yes.
I want Graduation to pass unnoticed, because movies of this sort so easily can. And, I mean, believe me, it poses questions that the viewer finds pretty tricky answering sometimes.
It's a film about compromises and the implications of the parents' role. Holly,
it's brilliantly acted.
Will you be going to see Graduation?
Oh yeah, I like it. Is it British or?
No, it's Romanian.
Oh, it is Romanian. Mm. Oh, okay. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
So subtitles.
Yeah, I like
unless you're Romanian, is pretty much okay. Ben?
I think, again, it's quite an interesting film, not something I tend to go for, crime drama in particular, but I think it varies with, obviously, the quality and how good they are. But overall, it does look like a really decent film.
I do hope we're not going to have a swathe of Romanian crime dramas in the same way as we had Swedish Scandi crime drama as well.
Everyone loves those, don't they? Everyone loves them.
Jumpers and things.
With the Swedish movies became somewhat of a cult. I mean, on television, there were not only so many, but I mean, once you had The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and that took off, I mean...
You've got your Wallanders, you've got your other scenarios. It's just never ending, it would seem.
Almost like insomnia.
Well, either that or the absolutely brand new incarnation of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
That now, that has had the critics reaching for their superlatives, and it had me reaching for my comparisons, because I've seen several versions of it. Of course, the Taylor Burton film directed by Mike Nichols was the first, but on stage, this is extraordinary drama. It's so witty, it also is so destructive, and also its view of the American dream, and also of a deeply destructive love between the two main characters, Martha, who's the daughter of the president of an American university, and George, her husband, who is an academic failure and works for or in that university, which is run by Martha's father. They have two little guests, Nick and Honey. He's just joined the biology faculty, who come in for, as it were, what they believe will be a quiet drink. The rather early hours, 2 o'clock in the morning. The facts are that this play is famous because it's such a wonderful theatre. But how did Imelda Staunton match up, say, to Kathleen Turner or Diana Rigg or Elizabeth Taylor? I mean, this is... It's directed by James McDonald. It's at the Harold Pinter Theatre. It gives you 3 hours of first-class drama where you're laughing half the time and half the rest of the time you're somewhat amazed at the brutality of it all, because George and Martha have a secret which is revealed as the play. It's revealed in this version later than it normally is. The odd thing about this production is that it's George, played by Conliff Hill, as it to some extent was opposite Kathleen Turner. It was an equal two-hander where it was played by Bill Irwin. What's fascinating about him, he's admittedly a paunchy, he's gone to seed, academically he's a failure, but this emphasizes, and I was fascinated by the performance, because it emphasized the very destructive nature, the fact that there's a very, very aggressive streak in a character who's normally played in the likes of Burton and David Suchet. You couldn't keep your eyes off them. In point of fact, it's George who... They play various destructive games through the night. It's George who wins, as is generally known, because he's underestimated by Martha and Nick. You wouldn't underestimate Burton and Suchet because they're such forceful characters. In the case of Conliff Hill, you can see his aggression. You can almost feel it, Also, he's got away with words. He's in the history department, but he doesn't run it because he isn't somebody who has, as Martha says, the guts to do so. Imelda Staunton gives everything she has in the most ferocious interpretation of the roles, to the extent where, by the third act, where George pounces, she seems almost burnt out. I have to say, you can't forget what you've seen, and her Martha is unforgettable, but I would make the point that it does have to have a certain poignancy. George and Martha's love is deep, and that between Honey and Nick, their relationship is terrifyingly superficial. The facts are that I felt Staunton fascinating, to be sure, but there was a sense in which she'd flung everything she had into it, and there wasn't the poignancy which there is in the last act, which there should have been, and which we had, for example, with Kathleen Turner, or indeed, I thought, on the film screen with Elizabeth Taylor. But this is a hell of an experience, and I'd urge anyone who can see it.
I was surprised to find that it was Imogen Poots' West End debut. I could have sworn she'd actually done West End stuff before, but clearly she hadn't. It's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf at that particular routine. And Michael Billington from The Guardian has obviously decided to eulogise Imelda Staunton at her magnificent best.
Yes, I saw a 5-star.
Yeah, perfection, he actually says. It's live action, so you clearly have to experience in the theatre, although, curiously, we saw a kind of trailer sort of thing, more kind of slide montage, really, of various actors declaiming on stage.
My goodness, I have to say, Martha declaims. When I went in to get my ticket, they were playing some of the performance on a video, possibly for latecomers outside, and you could just hear it. But when she brays and when she bellows, there is a sense for me that, although, as I say, it's absolutely superb theatre. There is an element of overacting in it. And this catches up, as I say, in the last act, I thought. You have to feel deeply for Martha because she's trapped in what she calls a vile marriage, yet the bonds between her and George are so deep.
But of course, Richard, it may well simply be that every performance changes and she just adjusts it. And you might have just seen her on an off night, because unlike film, where it's
repeatable... Oh, I wouldn't say it was an off night. My goodness me, if you saw the way she goes at him, as indeed the play demands, but you have to have that. There is a softer side to Martha too, and that for me was what didn't come across as it might have. Even so, I mean, one hell of a play and one hell of a production.
Ben, are you a theatrical soul? Would you be tempted to see this? Because obviously it's only got a short run. I think it's middle of May it comes off the stage.
I don't know. Theatrical in general, I'm a bit 50-50 with it. I sometimes appreciate it. I think it depends on my mood. It depends what's being shown.
If you like a verbal games, cut and thrust of debate, and also a deep destructiveness, because George and Martha have at each other and then play a series of games. The games humiliate the host, pump the hostess, peel the label, snap the dragon.
Not just games, Richard. Toxic games. Toxic games.
They are.
Bringing in innocent bystanders until the evening reaches its climax in a moment of devastating truth-telling. It could almost be a seminar in public relations. It's that kind of level. Amazing.
This is a seminar in destructive relationships, but also actually destroying things. And the little guests, as they call them, George and Martha call the honey and Nick married, but also you see them when they are on the doorstep. They are meat, so to speak, ready meat for George and Martha to
destroy. It's not good. You see, that's why the American education system sometimes has its challenges.
Good heavens.
I think I would quite like to see this.
It's an extraordinary play, but it's brilliantly written, and also you've got wonderful one-liners and wonderful verbal exchanges, and it's so clever. The way the moods vary is extraordinary.
So a reminder, Richard, that if people are wanting to check out the London theatre scene over the Easter period, where should they go for Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
To the Harold Pinter Theatre.
Or the Harold...
Well, they could also pop into Travesty's with Tom Hollander and Freddie Fox. That is an extraordinary play. If you...
Only time for one play, Richard. Sorry, you want a second play? We'll have to do it next week. That was a Pinter pause. Did you see what I did there? Nice little pause for Harold. Little dog's feet there. Pinter pause.
Yes, homage.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Holly, two questions or thoughts or comments.
I was going to say, have you ever been to the cinema where they do a live streaming of a theatre production, Richard?
Yes, I have. And I mean, one of the aspects of this, I'm very conscious of the fact we could take time on it.
Yeah. Ian Lennox cats are waiting.
I realise. I've seen Benedict Cumberbatch's Hamlet, and this idea of screening live plays, and also the fact you can see them all around the world. We all like to be in the theatre, we can't be. I think it's an absolutely marvellous one, and it keeps that very special cachet of the opera or the ballet or the play that you're watching because you're watching it live. And I just think that those of us, this is coming, I'm afraid, the live streaming of films into the home as they're released in so many cases. I do hope people will go and experience it as it should be experienced in the cinema.
And, of course, Benedict Cumberbatch, known for his mumbling, which is always marvellous. I mean, he's Sherlock.
No, I wouldn't say that. I didn't say that, and believe me, his diction...
He's denying all knowledge, clearly.
Holly. Cumberbatch, and any faults attached to that, but the mumbling, I do think it's a serious problem, because, you can't shout out in a theatre and speak up. That wouldn't be done.
You shout. Did anyone get that? That's what you were shouting.
Can you hear me at the back? What?
I feel like it sometimes. I do feel strongly about this, because, I mean, even a play like View from the Bridge, which was a tremendously acclaimed production, and you could see it was brilliantly staged. I'd love to have heard what those on either side of the stage heard last year.
Holly.
Richard, have you enjoyed the telephonic link with us this morning?
Enormously.
And will you be returning next week?
Oh, yeah. Alex, with his pauses, has been on splendid form.
Well, for mumblers around the world, Congregation softly whispering I love you, and from one low wonderful sort of connection to one I think we probably can refer to quite safely these days as that slapper in the northeast. Yes, it's Ian Lennox. How are you, Ian?
Fine, thanks.
Ian was of the mind that the whole media world had gone crazy over a certain Sunderland manager's little reviews over the weekend, where clearly he's got form. I mean, you know, let's face it, you know, he did the same with Manchester United, with Everton and so on. But yet, Ian, yourself, and indeed a gentleman who used to resound under the name in media circles of Frosty, because his name was Paul Frost.
That's right.
Yeah, Frosty was equally supportive. I didn't realise that he was still... But yes, he was supportive in his Facebook comments saying, yes, it's just gone crazy. Was this just, you know, the ramblings of a Newcastle United supporter who's staggering into the Premiership on the back of lots of fortunate results, such as last night, when yet again, despite Burton being denied a perfectly clear penalty, you know, you have this sort of ridiculous notion of winning. I mean, it's too much, isn't it?
I didn't watch the game personally, but I heard a lot about this penalty. It was all over my social media feed, so
yes,
be interested to hear your perspective from it.
It was I was in a very good seat in the stands, and I was about 50 yards from Benitez, and his face turned purple. Basically the referee awarded Newcastle a slightly dubious penalty, I thought. Newcastle player put the ball away, and then the linesman of the referee decided that one of the Newcastle players was encroached in the penalty area, and therefore he awarded the free kick, which is just not in the rules. The rules that say that quite clearly that if you encroach the penalty has to be retaken. And all hell broke loose. I mean, the game was delayed, I think, by 7 minutes in the end. The fourth official approached the linesman and the referee, certainly the referee, but the linesman was very nearby, with what looked like an iPad, which I assume had the rules on written on it, and that didn't alter anything. So either none of those three officials don't know the rule, or they bottled it.
In the words of his latest Facebook post, Opinion Lennox, a mistake? Really? The referee, the linesman and the fourth official conferred for almost a minute. Long enough for them to establish why the decision had been made and long enough for one of them to say, hang on, the rule says, the choice is stark. Either none of them know the rule about encroachment or they bottled it.
Yeah.
That was my Ian Lennox impersonation of the day.
it's a good job they won, though, isn't it? It's a good job.
That was me at the age of 12. Sorry?
Very good job Newcastle won. Had it become a draw or a loss?
There was a previous about this. There's a women's football match, an international match, where the same thing happened, and they replayed the game from the minute the penalty was taken and disallowed. And they retook the penalty in another match.
I won't comment on your Marmite commercial, but it did make me smile. He's forgotten where the bottle of Marmite is. life continues.
That's a whole new thing as well, isn't it?
It's a strange and wondrous world. But as we said to Richard Fitzwilliams, clearly it's not so much Ian that this whole piece is about in this football free zone that we declared, even though Ian managed to sort of wheedle in some... I challenge you, Ian, next time you're a few seats back from Rafa Benitez, utter the words, "Oi, Rafa, what do you think about Gibraltar?" To him. So I think you should get that point. You should get the Benitez view.
I'd rather value my ticket at Newcastle Grasses, actually, so I don't think I'll bother with that. I might send an anonymous letter, though.
Yeah, why don't you? It's a way forward to kind of build these links further forward. So, good stuff. Anyway, how are Ollie and Obo?
Very good. They had a rather large fight with a blackbird yesterday morning. three rooms had feathers all over them. There's a picture smashed, there was a speaker knocked to the floor, there's various other bits of damage, and I found the blackbird in my shower. They got in through the it escaped from them through the top of the shower.
Was it using the shampoo at the same time? Was it
I don't think that was his main concern at the time. So I chased them out, phoned the vet and said that I'll be bringing the bird down, expecting it to be able to put down because usually the wings are broken. Anyway, when I came, I had some to eat, and when I went back, the bird had got out of the shower, which meant it could fly, and it got trapped between the curtain and the window.
Was it not using your hair?
So all I did was open the window and let it out, and it flew off.
Was it not using your hairdryer to actually sort of, obviously...
Stop being silly, Alex.
No. It was using Joe Hart's Head and Shoulders.
It was a serious matter.
clearly if
Alan Heller wasn't bald, I don't know. I mean, there's enough feathers all over the place.
He had dandruff issues, that's the rumours.
It's a well-known fact in Newcastle, if it's not the magpies wanting to actually sort of use the facilities, it's your average blackbird popping in to actually have a quick shave.
If it had been a magpie, I really would be an upset, yes.
Exactly. Holly, any other thoughts that you'd like to put to Ian Lennox about life, the universe, or indeed the fact that it's only 48 hours before you start your film challenge?
Well, I was going to say, I'm still upset. My mum got me for April Fool's. She said one of my cats was having kittens, and I was really excited.
Did it become suspicious when you realised it was a male cat?
Oh, no, I didn't get that far. They are both female, so that helped in her favour.
Right.
But,
So you were looking forward to having kittens, or?
Yeah, no, I really want kittens.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but April Fool's.
Well, that's not funny, is it?
I think
you post that on social media?
Tell her I said so.
Yeah, I mean, Ian, you should actually relay that. I mean, can hardly relay that.
No, tell her I said so. A service from Alex.
Yes, okay, Ian. I know, some days I just begin to wonder where life is taking us. Anyway, we're heading off to all
it's
sorts
the life of a Man City fan, that is, Ian.
Oh, what have they done now? They've lost again, haven't they?
Yeah.
sorry about that, Alex.
Yeah, well, where are we in the league? We're fourth in the league, so...
Fourth in the league? That's not very good.
It's Arsenal's position, isn't it?
No, that's
not. Yeah, so you might not be in Europe next season, you're fighting for a place.
Yes,
fighting for the
Champions League anyway.
Life will continue in its own way. I won't even play you the effective camo tune for that. I'll sort of step aside from that and move on. We're talking about heart attacks in the very near future, because obviously that's what Pep Guardiola will be heading towards if he's not very careful.
Yeah, but
I think Rafa had one last night, didn't he?
Did he have any statement, didn't he?
We've got the British Heart Foundation's very own contributors, Lucy Wilkinson, talking about Marathon May, that nothing to do with the Prime Minister. Easily confused, but we will be sort of focusing on that and a whole heap of other things. You know, it's been very quiet in the Lennox household today, so nobody knocking on the door to actually sort out the roof, no magpies or...
No, I've got a lodge making breakfast, but I've moved to the front room.
Oh, I see. Right.
Well, I've moved to the back, if you want, and hear him cluttering about.
And is the lodger a thespian, perchance? Are they on stage?
Yes, he's a bass guitarist who's playing with Mamma Mia.
Well, in which case, you know, you could actually give him a moment's glory by simply saying his name on air, if you wish, and then you could actually say that his prowess has...
It's Gordon. His name is called Gordon.
Gordon.
Hmm.
Do we have a surname?
Oh, hang on, the two cats are fighting.
Oh, gosh, you see, this is, you see, you start giving extra... Bill,
guess,
Bill
Ramsey, Brown, Thunderbirds Gordon, Tracy Island.
Yeah. Just Gordon, the bass player Gordon.
Right. Gordon Shepherd, I think he's saying.
That's right. Ian doesn't know the name of his, really? his lodgers. What the hey? He'll remember them before too long. It's all the stress and joy of happiness.
He's a nice guy, anyway.
Well, you can say to Gordon, if he wishes to join us on the programme in the near future, he has the Ian Lennox seal of
going to have a double whammy.
Exactly.
All right, wonderful. You'll be pleased.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd like to feel it's making the day just a little bit more wonderful.
He's a Scottish friend.
don't mention.
I mean, Holly, which part of Scotland are you heading off to?
Aberdeen and then the Isle of Arran.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I almost had to do a documentary on one of the Scottish islands, one of the whiskey islands. They were trying to bring natural power into the island using waves and things. And I don't think I'd ever come back. It was one of the really nice whiskey islands.
Hebrides, probably.
Been there for a month or something.
Oh, whiskey galore. The quotes from Ian Lennox about the aforementioned David Moyes, are we living in an Evelyn Waugh novel? He's heard the tapes, and David Moyes was not threatening the reporter. He didn't even sound angry. If you listen, it was more as though he was having a laugh and gently admonishing her. She was laughing. She made no complaint and doesn't want to be involved in the afters. The whole thing is a nonsense being amplified by people jumping on bandwagons. Fair enough, there is too much sexism in the world, but for the Lord's sake, let's apply some common sense. I've edited that, obviously, for Radio Broadcast.
PC, isn't it? It's political correctness taken to another level.
Well, it's also dreadful reporting as well, because what they've done, a lot of the reports didn't have it, well, obviously the newspapers can't, but on the media, on the internet and things, they didn't have the sound.
Well,
and the written word looks quite sinister, but the sound when you hear what the way it's said and everything is ridiculous.
But Ian, surely, and it's produced by such an organ of truth as the Daily Star, what more can one actually anticipate, really? You know, obviously
was the Daily Star broke the story?
They did indeed, yes. So, you know,
right.
It's clearly sort of developing rampant and investigative.
But a lot of the other ones didn't even mention, they were laughing, they just actually reproduced the words, and the words themselves sound quite sinister.
We're taking that context, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's all it is.
And I think, I mean, actually, funny enough, I was reading on the internet this morning, the local paper, the Evening Chronicle, just asked what people's views were, and I read the first 20, and I think 19 of them said it was nonsense.
Yeah,
I mean, he's been forced to apologise, and the clubs apologise, and there's these people jumping, and this woman got up and sort of almost started a female revolution over the Brummer thing. That's ridiculous.
I clearly should have actually sort of had a tally chart for the number of times I've said the word Holly and then I've been spoken over completely by either Richard Fitzwilliams or Ian Lennox. It's just one of those classic scenarios.
Sorry, I've got him in a bad mood, haven't I?
It's like living in a Steve Wright production.
You're very lucky to win last night. I was in a really bad mood.
Holly, from your own perspective, did you follow this story? Did you kind of get hold of the David Moyes incident where he's accused of threatening behaviour and he's actually publicly apologised and Sunderland Football Club have actually said never happen again?
No, I haven't. I don't keep up with the Star's output that often.
It wasn't just the Star, actually. It was all picked up on it.
It was indeed all over.
Remember that the book, I can't remember which the book was, it was Scoop, I think, where one of Evelyn Waugh's characters, a journalist, got on a train to go cover a war, and he got to the wrong station and wrote, you know, as I write this, so-and-so's, but the bombs are falling around me. And they read it and they sound. It must be really happening. So the war actually started. And it's a bit like that. I mean, they all just decided that the whole thing had some validity and it didn't. I think one of the problems is that journalists, what usually happens is that people ring, when a story like this breaks, the journalists ring up the most rabid or the most people with the most extreme views on the subject, rather than ones who've just got a common sense. And so the whole thing, what becomes a ridiculous, stupid premise, actually spirals into some sort of factual basis.
He deeply regrets the comments.
Well, he's got to say that. He's been told to, hasn't he?
I
wouldn't have said it, sorry.
It was in the heat of the moment, added the 53.
Heat of the moment. He's laughing
Scott.
His head off when he's saying it. There's no heat in it at all.
The reporter, it's quite interesting, the reporter wasn't concerned at all. She didn't, I don't think she was too bothered about it.
She was laughing. She was actually laughing. And I mean, it was after, immediately after the interview, which I actually saw, actually, it was after a football match. And they were both laughing.
You can access it via the BBC's website page, and indeed Shadow Sports Minister Dr. Rosina Alin-Khan called on the FA to act. If you look at the facts that he wouldn't have said that to a male reporter, and I truly believe that, I think the comments and his behaviour and attitude...
She should answer one question. Have you heard the tape? And if she hasn't heard the tape, she should be ashamed of herself.
Does that put a bit of flesh on the bones for you, Holly?
Well, it says she's accepted the apology, so I know, you can still hold a bit of a grudge, but... I mean, that's a bit of an extreme to the other.
She just wants the thing to go away, honestly.
Gary Lineker also condemned Moyes'
behaviour. Yeah, he's a...
But Gary Lineker likes tweeting about everything now, doesn't he? he'd tweet about blinking Gibraltar
He'll end up president of the United States, where he's going.
I would hope so. The world could be a better place with a few more crisps in office. Anyway.
It's all opinion, though. It's not fact. It's subjective. That's the thing. It's all subjective.
Yeah.
And so the time has been reached where Holly needs to put those last two questions to Ian Lennox in her own inimitable way, and hopefully without Ian responding. That's a bit cheeky, my girl, if you don't watch that, etc., because you don't know what he could actually say. He's in the northeast, for Lord's sakes. Anyway, carry on, Holly, go for it.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this morning?
Well, despite the fact I've hardly got a word in, yes.
Well, will you be returning next week then?
Yes, the only thing I thought was much to have today, though.
Hurrah!